Happy Thursday, everybody. We've almost made it to another weekend. Thank you for joining me on this Thursday, August 6th. Happy to be with you. We got a fun show for you today. We have two guests joining me over the phone. We will have Mike Mazzaferri coming up in the next segment, the owner and operator there of Sierra Sage and Wild Creek. So we'll get him on the phone, get his opinion on the PGA Championship, the first major of the season, of the year even. Getting ready. Well, actually, it's underway. It's well underway. Jason Day actually leading right now at -5. Then a few golfers, Bud Cauley, Xander Schauffele, Martin Kramer, Scotty Scheffler, all -4 under right now. So a little bit of a group there of golfers at 4 under. But we'll get Mike Mazzaferri's opinion on the course as well as the golfers involved there coming up in the next segment. And then also happy to have Mike Golic Jr. joining me as well there in the third segment. So got some couple great guys coming up here on the show. So stay tuned for that. Also talk about a change coming to the Indianapolis 500, which happens a little over 2 weeks from now, actually. So we'll talk about that as well. But first, just wanted to start with some of the happenings from the NBA and NHL world last night. Well, actually, I'll give you a little bit of an update because we have a handful of games going on between those two leagues right now. We have a pivotal Game 3, another Game 3 where the series tied 1-1 between Vancouver and Minnesota. They're currently in the third period, kind of winding down there in the third period. But the Canucks have a 2-0 lead on the Wild. And then after one period in the East qualifying round robin, games, we have the Flyers leading the Capitals 1-0. And the crazy thing that came out last night, or was kind of the revelation of last night, was that the Boston Bruins, who are going to have the best or one of the best records in the Eastern Conference and in NHL, can no longer finish higher than third in that Eastern Conference round robin seeding, which, you know, I saw an article today. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I saw an article today about, you know, showing the pros and cons of keeping this expanded NHL playoffs around. And I was thinking that last night when I was watching some of those playoff games. I mean, both of those 12-5 matchups had game threes last night, and both 12 seeds walked away the victor. Montreal beat Pittsburgh and Edmonton, or Chicago beat Edmonton. So this is providing an interesting window, because when we talked about baseball expanding its playoffs, the argument was, are you going to be watering down the competition too much? Are you going to allow too many teams in that shouldn't be in? But now we're looking at an NHL playoff setup that has 12 teams of the 16 in the Eastern Conference and the 15 in the Western Conference that are competing in these playoffs, and the 12 seeds are a game away from upsetting the 5 seeds. So you have to wonder, is this a case of being off for so long that you've lost momentum and really it's just come down to which teams can find it sooner? Or is this a case where talent runs deep, and if you have these type of play-in and qualifier series, more teams get a chance to shine? I don't think anybody, I mean, before the shutdown happened, Montreal was in a bad place, and so was Chicago. No one really thinking of them as playoff teams. But now here we are, and they're very close to knocking out Pittsburgh and Edmonton, two teams that had very good seasons this year. So it does provide an interesting question of whether or not this expanded playoff format should stick around. And I'm all for it. I mean, I'm all for more playoffs happening. And again, there's a fine line between giving teams more of a chance and watering down that competition. And then, you know, some years it'll seem like this year it seems as though we should keep this 12-team playoff, whereas, you know, next year there could be 6 or 7 teams that really stand out as cup contenders. And then if you were to keep this system around, you know, you could just get worthless series where teams are getting swept right and left. So you have to take into account that maybe that time off between the March and where they picked back up in August, if that's playing a role into how these teams have come back and given these teams that are lower seeds a chance to be a playoff team in that field of 16, or if this is just a wild and crazy playoff that, you know, where we sometimes get in hockey. But that really stuck out to me, the fact that Boston's going to have one of the best records, if not the best record in the Eastern Conference, and they won't be higher than the third seed. They'll be the third or fourth seed, depending on how their final qualifier game goes against Washington, because they lost to Philly, they lost to Tampa Bay, so all they have left is the Capitals. And that'll be an interesting matchup there. It did seem like Boston brought back that physicality last night. It did seem like there was a little extra pop on their hits. They lost 3-2 to Tampa Bay, but it still seemed like that physicality was back at the level you expect from a Boston Bruins team. So the hope maybe they can, build on that in their final round robin seeding game against Washington. But for the most part, I feel like there's a strong argument that you could run with this playoff structure, for the coming seasons. So maybe that'll become a topic as the season ends and they start to look towards next year. Or maybe there's going to be such a short off-season period that they won't look into it. But I think it's definitely worth a conversation between, the owners and everybody there in the NHL to think about keeping this expanded playoff format. Because I think it's, the best of five has provided a lot of unique drama that you don't often see in playoff hockey. And, of course, the round-robin seeding of the top four teams, you can have something like Boston where a team looks like they're earmarked for the number one seed and they can't keep it together in this type of competition. The third seed, maybe even the fourth seed, should they not be able to beat the Capitals. So it's a very interesting backdrop and a very interesting change. And amongst the different ways we've seen leagues come back this year, I would have to say the NHL's is really sticking out for providing. The NBA has provided a lot of entertainment as well. But the NHL jumping into those playoffs and having it just set up a little differently has intrigued me. And it's also provided, I think it's paid off. I think it's provided a lot of the entertainment we were hoping it would. And here we are, possibly with a few upsets here in the first round in terms of the 5-12 seeds and also the round robin seeding. So I think this has been a great comeback for hockey, and maybe, just maybe, this format's here to stay. But like I said, the Canucks leading the Wild right now in the third. Flyers and Capitals just started their second period with the Flyers up 1-0 there. Also some games going on in the NBA. We've already had one game go final today. Sacramento beating New Orleans. Both of those teams in the race for the eighth seed there in the Western Conference. And Bogdan Bogdanovich had a career-high 35 points. Good to see some of the big guys really getting some time to stand out in this restart. But Bogdan Bogdanovich, 35 points in the game to help lead Sacramento to that 140-125 victory. And the Kings almost had a 50-point first quarter. It was 49-39 Sacramento after the first quarter. So the Kings came out high. It wasn't just Bogdanovich either. There was a really good showing from De'Aaron Fox as well. He had 30 points. You also have Harrison Barnes, who contributed 22 points as a starter. You also had one double-digit scorer off the bench in Corey Joseph. So a good performance there by the Kings. And 53% from the field, 48% from beyond the arc. So a good shooting day as well there. And for New Orleans, not a bad showing from their star starters there. Zion Williamson, 24 points. Brandon Ingram had 24 points. Drew Holiday had 17. And they also got 18 points off the bench from J.J. Redick. They also got 11 points off the bench from Josh Hart. So there's still a lot going on there for New Orleans. But you just got to hand it to Sacramento. They came out on fire there in that first quarter. And even though they cooled off a little bit, they were pretty much able to sustain that lead over New Orleans for the rest of the game and increased it a little bit. But a strong performance there from Sacramento as this team is one of those teams, again, just fighting for that eighth spot or at least getting to the ninth spot and being close enough to force that play-in. But that's the one game that's gone final so far in the world of the NBA. One game at halftime right now, actually getting ready to come out of halftime. But the Phoenix Suns playing the Indiana Pacers. One team as a whole, I think, surpassing a lot of people's expectations, that being Phoenix, and one having a player that surpassed a lot of expectations. That's TJ Warren for Indiana. That guy has had an amazing restart, and even in this game, he has 13 points. He's the leading scorer for Indiana. Nobody else, even for the Pacers, in double digits right now besides TJ Warren with 13 points. And again, in Phoenix, led by DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker. Booker has 12 points, Ayton with 15 right now. So an interesting matchup there. Again, you have Indiana, who's in the playoffs, and obviously TJ Warren, who has done a great job of taking over as Victor Oladipo kind of works himself back, and Indiana figures out how to fill those voids that they don't have, one of those being Domantas Sabonis that isn't out there with them. But then, of course, Phoenix as well, being one of those teams that's chasing down that spot in the eighth, in the eighth seed. And I think they actually moved. They were the bottom team there of the Western Conference teams that were fighting for that eighth spot. They had managed to just creep out of that spot last night, but they have fallen back down into that bottom spot, I believe, with Sacramento's win today. So Phoenix, although still, Memphis sitting there in eighth place still just 2.5 games separating Memphis in eighth and Phoenix at the bottom of that chasing pack right now. Just 2.5 games separating all of those teams in the race for the eighth place in the Western Conference. So that's going to continue to heat up. The other game going on right now in the second quarter seems to be a lopsided game right now. Miami Heat are up on the Milwaukee Bucks 63-43. Talk about a team that seemed off at the start. Milwaukee's been very hot and cold, and as of late, way more colder than hotter. And you have to think how much their momentum was stunted as that season got, you know, postponed and picking back up. And you heard, I think it was Giannis saying that he, you know, a lot of these players talked about how they couldn't get a full workout in. You know, they were limited wherever they were during the lockdown and during when, you know, they were quarantined at their home. And you wonder how much that really just stunted Milwaukee's momentum and all the chemistry they had, because for them to be trailing by 21 points right now to Miami, and I'm all for Miami. I mean, I think they're a great team. They are playing really good team basketball right now. But if you're Milwaukee, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, you can't be down like this, you know, in the second quarter. So there is plenty of time to go. But if you're Milwaukee, this seems, you know, this seems a bit alarming. You know, Chris Middleton leading the way with 13 points. Antetokounmpo has 10 points. Those are the only players for Milwaukee that are in double digits right now. And for Miami, they have, you know, a surprising leader, Duncan Robinson, right now leading the way with 11 points. They actually have 16 points from Tyler Hero coming off the bench, so he's giving them a nice lift there with Jimmy Butler actually not in the starting lineup there for the Miami Heat. But a great game right there for Miami in this first half. I mean, up to 65 points, almost up to 70 there, with still just under 3.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. So a lot happening. And one, you know, a couple results that stood out last night from the world of the NBA. One, the fact that the Thunder beat the Lakers by almost 20 points, 105-86, as CP3 led the rout of another cold shooting team there in the Lakers. I mean, how cold was it? The Lakers shot 35% from the field, 13% from beyond the arc, and 65% from the charity strike. So none of those are numbers to boast about for any NBA team, especially one locking up the number one seed there in the Western Conference. But also, you know, just hats off to Oklahoma City. Again, all five starters getting into double digits. Chris Paul leading the way with 21, and Danilo Gallinari with 19. Steven Adams follows up with 18. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 13. Lugens Dort had 14 points of his own there as well. So anytime you can get all five starters in double digits, something the Lakers only had one starter do, that being LeBron James getting in with 19 points, you're going to have usually some good results. So OKC getting another strong win under their belt there. And then in Boston, the Boston-Brooklyn game, the Celtics got an interesting boost from a player off the bench. Robert Williams III had been averaging 4.6 points in the 2019-20 season, and their game against Brooklyn put up 18. So he essentially tripled, or almost over quadrupled the amount of points he'd been averaging that season, this season against Brooklyn. So anytime you can get boosts like that from guys off the bench, exactly, you know, when you also have all five of your starters getting double digits as well, with Jaylen Brown leading the way with 19, Tatum with 18, Gordon Hayward with 18 points there, Marcus Smart with 12. So you have a lot of great contributors there for that Boston team, and then getting that little boost off the bench helped the Celtics to that 149-115 win over the Brooklyn Nets. So some interesting results there. We talked a little bit about the hockey results as well from last night, with Pittsburgh losing to Montreal 4-3, allowing Montreal to take a 3-1 series lead, and that game-winning goal came just 5:33 into the third period there, as Montreal rallied from two goals down. So again, Montreal gets that early goal. Pittsburgh comes back, looks as though they get focused up again, get those two goals, take a 2-1 lead, and then, you know, they're able to get out to a 3-1 lead at the start of the third period before Montreal just goes on a run. And none of them were power play goals either. The thing about Montreal is they went 0-for-5 on the power play last night and still found ways to get that victory over Pittsburgh there. So Montreal in a good spot. Chicago as well with the 4-3 win over the Edmonton Oilers. They also had a relatively late goal there, the game-winning goal with just over a minute left on the clock in the third period. So some good drama last night in both the NHL and the world of the NBA. And only more to come, and can't wait to see how the rest of these tournaments play out. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have our pal Mike Mazzaferri on to talk PGA Championship. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit Blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
I am joined now by Mike Mazzaferri, president of Maz Golf Management. Mike, thank you so much for coming back to the show. And we have finally arrived at our first major of the golf season. Did you think we would ever actually get here?
You know, I didn't. It's been such a difficult year sports-wise, as you know. You know, I didn't think we were going to have any majors. And now, you know, we've got this one, and technically it's in next year's tour season. We got the Masters still sitting out there in November, so that's going to be the extent of the majors.
And with golf now, you know, being back for a relatively long amount of time compared to some other sports, what have you thought of the way they've handled some you know, one or two players here and there testing positive and just kind of controlling the environment around these tournaments? How have you felt the PGA and golf kind of as a whole has handled that?
You know, I think they've handled it well. It's like the other sports that are coming online, Spencer. It's about TV and sharing it with the world so people that are either quarantined or undercover out there can watch some sports. And I think the tour's done a nice job. They've taken a lot of precautions, and you know, they're testing regularly and doing everything as far as spacing and no spectators and so forth to make it as safe as you can. These are difficult times, and having some golf or, you know, some of the other major sports coming online is better than none, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we dive into this now, the PGA Championship kicking off today and happening at TPC Harding Park. What are your thoughts and opinions kind of on that golf course and what that can bring to this first major?
You know, it's the time of year that this PGA Championship was supposed to be in May, and that's really before the big cold hits the city. You know, if you've ever played golf, you know, within a mile or two of TPC Harding Park is Olympic Club and the Cal Club, Lake Merced, San Francisco Club, all of those courses right there. They're just tremendous golf courses, but in the summer they're exceptionally hard because it's cold, it's foggy. You know, when the valley heat hits Central Valley of California, that inland marine layer comes in, and it's 55, 58 degrees and damp. And it's, I think we're going to see a very interesting PGA Championship, and it's more of a British Open in my mind than it is a PGA Championship.
Well, and heading into this event, Brooks Koepka, defending champion, a lot of talk about whether or not he can go for the three-peat here at this event. How do you feel his chances are in trying to accomplish that?
You know, all the odds makers like Brooks and Justin Thomas because they've been playing so well. But my mentality is, you know, where has he played well in the cold? Because this is like winter golf almost. The ball's not going to carry. Course plays 7,200 yards. It's a par 70, but it's going to play 8,000 yards because of the cold. And the ball doesn't carry in the cold. And I think the one thing that there hasn't been very much discussion on, your body moves slower in the cold too. You know, so all the numbers are going to go down. This course is going to have a lot of teeth, and I think it's going to favor long hitters. But if those long hitters need to hit it in the shorter grass too, because even hitting wedges out of this to small greens is going to be difficult. So I'm looking at guys like, you know, Rory and Shane Lowry, and even Zach Johnson has shown that he can play in the cold, and Henrik Stenson, some of those guys, Colin Morikawa, played at Stanford down the street. He used to play in some of these golf courses in the cold too. And And I don't think Tiger's going to be a factor because of his body, and this cold weather's not going to do well for him. I don't think Phil either. But, you know, I'm kind of leaning toward those guys that we know play well in the cold and those damp conditions.
Yeah, it's a very talented field heading into this PGA Championship, and you mentioned it right there. Of course, the big news that Tiger Woods will be involved in this, and it seems as though the expectation is relatively low. And of course, you say that you don't expect a lot from him in terms of his body reacting to the cold. But do you see him making the cut at least, or is this a major where Tiger will fail to do that?
You know, I don't think he's going to make the cut just because he hasn't been playing and. These conditions have shown over time. I mean, he really struggles when it's cold, and I just don't. And this course, you know, I'd love to see him come out and play well. It'd be great for golf. But, you know, if the battle shapes up that everybody's thinking it's going to be Brooks and JT, but I think you got to look at the Irishmen and the UK guys that, you know, play in Scotland and Ireland and those places. I think they're going to kind of come up and surprise some people.
And is there an underdog that you would kind of encourage people to watch? Anybody that's kind of flown under the radar that you think is a little more dangerous heading into this championship?
You know, I really like Zach Johnson in this because, you know, he's won an Open Championship and he always plays good in the cold. And I like Colin Morikawa, you know, because he's played so well recently. You know, he won, you know, the Barracuda last year, and he's won a couple times out there already. And he's from, you know, played golf in the Bay Area. So I think he's somebody to watch out for because it's not just about hitting it far on this golf course. You better have all the clubs in your bag. You better be – the short game better be dialed in on these small greens. The putter better be rolling. It's not just about hitting it. You know, if they hit it 300 yards in this weather, that's equivalent to 400 yards up here, you know. that's how long it's going to play. And so – you know, there's two drivable par fours, but I only think really one. You know, the 16th is 330, and that's got a possibility. They're saying they can drive the first hole, too. It's 395. I don't see anybody hitting it on that green, but every time I say that, somebody does.
they need that extra motivation from you, Mike. That's what they need.
Yeah, if they're listening to this, they'll be swinging hard. And Bryson swings hard enough at it, I think, to hit it that far. Like, you know, the bulk he put on and the way he swings at it now, he swings for the bleachers on every tee shot.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got that home run swing going right now.
Yeah, he does. And he didn't play well at the Memorial. You know, certain golf courses, that home run swing, you better not bring it. And this is one of them. You know, over the years, you look at Olympic Club, you know, with its short yardage and stuff, but you look at the scores that have won at Olympic Club right down the street, and even par's won U.S. Opens there, two or three under par. When, you know, a golf course that's 700 or 800 yards longer, like Congressional, 10 under wins, you know. So that tells you about the conditions in this little, you know, environment there where TPC Harding Park is. It's just tough golf.
Yeah, and then I think as you know, sports have come back, we as viewers have gotten used to the look of no fans, and in some cases, you know, some broadcasts not using the artificial crowd noise. We've gotten used to hearing just kind of the natural sounds of whatever game you may be watching. But now that we get into a major, these are tournaments that, you know, have a whole different environment to them. How do you think it will affect players, and how do you think it'll be for viewers to see a major with no fans?
You know, it takes a level of excitement away for sure, you know, and I think it's easier as a fan to watch with no players than it is for a player to play with no fans, because when you get momentum out there, the crowd really jumps on the bandwagon and helps the player build that momentum, and they're not going to get much of that. And, you know, it's going to be cold and quiet out there, and, you know, getting momentum and just staying steady, I think, is going to be what wins this tournament, not somebody getting hot and staying hot, because I don't think anybody's going to do that.
Is there anybody that stands out to you that you think can benefit from having no fans there, or maybe somebody that would suffer the most from not having a crowd there?
You know, Tiger feeds off the crowd, obviously, and, you know, he's going to struggle without fans there. But, You know, I think the players that, you know, like Brooks Koepka, I mean, he kind of shuts everything out when he plays. The players that can focus, you know, more on hitting the shots and you know, the ones with rabbit ears and stuff that hear everything, this is good for them because you're not going to hear anything but birds chirping, you know, and so that fixes it. But, you know, nobody really jumps out. Henrik Stenson, I think, you know, he has really proven to play well in tough conditions, and he's also a quiet, introverted kind of guy. And, you know, he might jump up. You know, like I mentioned, Zach Johnson, you know, those are guys that kind of play with their inner mind more than some of the others. But, and you look at Justin Thomas, he's a pretty emotional player, you know, but he won last week. So, you know, he's playing well. So it's going to be fun to watch. I'm going to be glued to it. And when I'm out teaching or doing my thing, I'm going to be, you know, rewinding and watching. I won't miss any of it. I was supposed to actually work this week and at the driving range in the short game area at TPC Harding Park, and they called off about 80% of the PGA member volunteers like me, because in our region here, there's a couple hundred of us that volunteered, and there's only about 10 or 12 actually there because they didn't need us. You know, a lot of it's crowd control and things like that, you know, keeping the people off the players, and that's not necessary for us to be there to do that, you know.
Yes, unfortunately, so, that job is not needed this year.
Yeah, so, but I think it's going to be very exciting, and I think it's going to surprise some people how tough Harding Park is going to play. If it stays foggy, you know, you heard the old cliche and Mark Twain, you know, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. Well, it's true. It's, and I think viewers are going to see that, and just circumstances of, you know, moving the championship from May to August, and it would have been a lot warmer and a lot sunnier than it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always fun to see what kind of natural elements golfers have to go through, especially during a major. And as the PGA Tour is busy, you are also busy as well with Sierra Sage and Wild Creek. What should golfers know about anything going on with those two great courses?
Yeah, you know, Spencer, since we got back open May 1st, you know, we were closed most of April. It's been busy here at Sierra Sage, and golf has actually proven to be a really safe thing. You know, I told somebody the other day, we've had over 30,000 visitors to Sierra Sage since May 1st, and
wow.
You know, been averaging 7,500, 8,000 rounds a month, and it's really busy, and we're still riding single to carts, and the rounds are going fast, even though we're that busy. But we've worked hard at social distancing, and we know of one COVID case of all those people that played here, and it was somebody that contracted COVID and got it from their wife who was in healthcare. You know, and he's since recovered, and everything's good, and that kind of speaks to the safety of golf. You know, being outdoors and still applying social distancing and outside, and when you're in the building, you know, watching what we do with masks and gloves, it's people feel safe, and you know what, it is safe. So we're grateful to be that busy, and we're grateful that we offer people some peace when they come out here. You know, it's a good escape for people to get out and play. And Wild Creek, we opened up July 1st. Things are going well there. We're playing what's called the Creek 6, the first five holes and the ninth hole there, and it's being well accepted. The par 3 course is busy. And we're working on a redesign that we're going to present to the county this fall to do a renovation, hopefully, there. If things go well and the county likes it, we'll have a continuation of golf there. That's kind of my goal, is we can't lose another public course.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And you and your team and your crew have done such a great job at Sierra Sage, and also getting Wild Creek up and running again. So it's been great for, as you say, all of those people to be able to have an outlet, be able to get some fresh air, know that it's in a safe environment. So thank you and your team for being able to put on, you know, allowing people to go out there and golf and doing it in a safe manner, because I think that is – been you know, kind of a microcosm of what the world of golf has been able to do. Be sure to give entertainment in a safe way. So thank you and your team for that, Mike.
Well, thank you, Spencer. It's always good talking with you.
He is Mr. Mike Mazzaferri. Always appreciate his time. And didn't actually give you guys an update on Brooks Koepka when I came on the air, but he is one of the nine golfers right now that is tied at 4 under, chasing Jason Day at 5 under. A big, big thank you to Mike Mazzaferri there. Always appreciate his time and his insight when it comes to the world of the PGA, and we will see how his thoughts and predictions end up when we get to Sunday and we know who's walking away PGA champion. But when we come back, we're going to take a break. We will have Mike Golic Jr. on the line up next. So stay tuned for that here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
I am joined now by Mike Golic Jr. Mike, thank you so much for being here, man. I appreciate your time and a lot to get to. I wasn't sure where to start, but I thought, you know what, a lot going on in college football right now. So I'll start there. We know that the first season has been canceled at the FBS level with UConn. Were you surprised by that? Do you think this is a trend that independent teams will you know, end up following like UConn?
You know what, UConn, I would somewhat caution people to try and make a trend just because, and especially seeing it locally here, kind of building this way for years now. They've been in some pretty difficult financial situations as an athletic department, even leading into the pandemic, especially their football program. And really since leaving the old Big East and everything that was associated with that, it's been a difficult go. So this seems sort of inevitable with them. I think other independents could be in trouble, though. And we saw what's going on with Notre Dame, the most notable independent in the country, but having their ACC tie, the way that helped. For everyone else who lacks the resources of those upper echelon programs, this is going to be the difficult part of it. And I know the NCAA Board of Governors just canceled now. This doesn't affect football, but the Division II and Division III championships, I should say, shouldn't affect FBS football. Canceling those championships, the difference between, you know, Division II at the top level, FCS at the top level, and the low-level Division I programs isn't that wild when it comes to the resources at hand. So that part, unfortunately, could be a trend of the ability of schools outside of the Power Five, and even as you get to the bottom of the Group of Five, to stomach a lot of the financial demands that are going to come with trying to operate a season during a pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always going to provide some interesting challenges there. And you yourself, you played with Notre Dame. You're very familiar with them. They did join the ACC for this season. Is this essentially an open door for them to stick with the ACC in football and move forward like that? Or do you think they're going to stay an independent team as we move forward and get away from these kind of coronavirus-specific schedules?
Yeah, no, I'm going to enjoy the anger that ensues from the general conference folk that watch Notre Dame wave goodbye to the ACC officially after the season again and go back to being independent. And that's not a knock on the ACC, but it's more an endorsement of what is a partnership that works for everybody right now. I always thought when Notre Dame signed up for all of its other sports, went to the ACC, Notre Dame had the tie-in with football where they would play 5 or 6 conference games a year as a part of that relationship, was really building toward that pie in the sky scenario we all talk about in the future of major conference realignment, super conferences as the only entryway into what the college football playoff morphs into. I thought then Notre Dame would be boxed into it. But as of right now, if we do get back to, as you put it, non-COVID football seasons and schedules, there's still no real reason for Notre Dame to go down this road. I'm pretty sure Notre Dame's strength of schedule got lighter when they joined and went full-time on the ACC slate of schedules than what they normally do. There's just not a need, as the college football playoffs guidance currently sits, to say, well, getting that 13th data point of a potential conference championship and going that route trumps or is worth Notre Dame not being able to schedule as it pleases, collect its own TV money with the NBC deal, and operate business as usual. So I think we're going to see more of the same once Notre Dame gets back to normal circumstances outside of the season.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And then as we move closer to this season, we know that whatever the start date may be, a lot of start dates now in September for the Power Five conferences. But on a scale of 1 to 10, as we talk here on August 6th, what is, you know, what, where do you stand on that scale and confidence of this football season happening this year?
I stand on probably like an 8 of it starting. It seems like, based on the financial situation around college sports, that we're seeing clear as day now. Like, this is all driven by dollars and cents in a way that's kind of making it uncomfortable for a lot of people. having to face that reality with air quotes amateur athletics now. But finishing, it's a coin flip at this point. And based on what we're seeing at schools like Louisville that just had to shut down because of an outbreak of COVID cases tied to a party on campus, supposedly, a similar thing happening at Rutgers not too long ago before that, all of this before we have the general student populations introduced back to these campuses. That's the part that I still don't know how many of these schools are ready to account for, because they're not willing to bubble their student athletes, because treating them differently, letting athletes take classes online or stay in their own part of campus, would admit that they're different. And then the NCAA and the conferences know the rabbit hole that that opens up. So I have very low confidence in the season finishing right now, unfortunately, because those campuses are going to be too much for them to control, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That is the tough part, that X factor, those students around the athletes that you really, I mean, even if you control the athletes, you can't really control the students around them as much as you'd probably like to. But this also a day of importance for the NFL. The opt-out deadline is today, so we'll know officially the players that aren't playing and are playing this season. But with the amount of players we've already seen opt out, of course, some star players, some we're going to take lesser roles. But do you think the quality of these games this season for the NFL is in jeopardy with all of these opt-outs?
I think the quality of the season was going to be in jeopardy because of the format of the offseason, more so than a lot of these opt-outs. Now, we've seen some teams more effective than others. The Patriots losing 7-8 players on a year where, quite frankly, they needed an influx of talent, not this exodus, is going to be trouble for them changing over from the Brady era to now Cam Newton being at the helm there. You look at other places, you know, Buffalo waiting to hear what's going to happen with Tre'Davious White right now, who said he's still undecided as of yesterday leading into this morning, what he's going to do this season. The second best corner in the NFL, arguably, in a secondary that's predicated on him being great, continuing to be the strength of that team. That's going to be part of it, but the biggest part is going to be that these guys haven't been in their buildings since the end of last season, that we really didn't get any semblance of an off-season program for a lot of these players, and now they're going to go into a training camp environment that's going to be completely different from what they're used to. All of those changes, less time on the field than even we saw under the old collective bargaining agreement, is going to mean it's going to take these guys a lot longer to get back in the functional football, you know, whether it's game shape or just getting used to going out there and operating. As we've seen, a lot of quarterbacks change teams, new head coach is always the difficulty. It's going to be difficult for the teams that aren't Kansas City, Baltimore, New Orleans, and San Francisco, who bring back their large part of their core and their coaches.
Yeah, going to present some interesting challenges, especially early on in that NFL season. And we've had some heated debates here around the station about the NFL not using a bubble system, trying to use a bubble system. Obviously, they're trying to create each kind of individual environment around each team and each facility. But do you think with that, the NFL can avoid the outbreak issue that Major League Baseball is seeing right now? Or is that pretty much inevitable if you're not going to do a bubble like the NBA or the NHL or the WNBA has been doing?
I think it's got to be inevitable, right? Like, unless, like, that would require the assumption to be that NFL players are just inherently more responsible than Major League Baseball players. And I don't see any reason why I would think that that's true. You know, you've got people around the same age with a ton of disposable income who are used to be able to doing that. And quite frankly, in the NFL, you've just got more bodies. And with more bodies means you've got more opportunities for one or two people. Because that's all it takes, right, is one or two people that decide to act like this and bring it back into the workplace environment when you opt for not going into a bubble setting. I bet the NFL, and they're probably going to look back on this the same way Major League Baseball, I bet in an honest moment, if you ask Rob Manfred and company, man, do you wish you would have just tried some creative bubble approach? Maybe it's multiple bubbles. Maybe it's not just one or two like we're seeing in the NHL. Maybe it's even more than that to try and just centralize as much as you can. I think Rob Manfred would regret it, and I think when the NFL goes through all this, they're going to regret, and that's the players included, because they all play a role in this, because this is pro sports and they get to collectively bargain. I think everyone involved is going to look back and say, we should have explored that option much more thoroughly.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there, Mike. Absolutely. And then the NBA restart, providing a lot of great entertainment. I mean, really, with any sport coming back, it's been providing a lot of great entertainment. But that race for the 8th seed out west was going to be the main show there. And I don't know if I expected Memphis to struggle as much as they have in the beginning of this restart. But what do you think of the struggles they're going through? And do you think they'll still be able to either make the playoffs or at least force that play-in series with the 8th or 9th seed, depending on where they are, to try and stay alive for that playoff spot?
Yeah, it's looking like that play-in. And I listen, like, we all kind of understood the transparency of what was involved here, right? This seemed like the NBA taking every chance it could to try and get Zion involved in the postseason. And that's not to accuse them of collusion. It's just an understanding of, man, you've got a bona fide star, and that's no disrespect to Ja, who's probably going to deservedly win Rookie of the Year. But everyone wanted to see that matchup. It is great for TV to have two of the brightest stars potentially going at that, even though Zion's come back and been on the minutes restriction and all these things. But I think this is part of what we should have expected more of. I think everyone expected to see kind of a dip in league play overall coming off this hiatus. But you watched even opening night when it was Utah, and I forget who they played in the first game, and then you had the Clippers and the Lakers in the second game. And the difference in quality was remarkably noticeable in all this. And so it makes sense that teams, as you get further down here, we've seen the 76ers struggle in a lot of ways as well. Teams that were in the middle of the pack that now had that continuity disrupted are going to lead to, hopefully, something like that. So I'd imagine a play-in game, yeah.
And then you mentioned the Lakers. A lot of people reacted, of course, when they lost to Toronto and they bounced back with a win. But then they lose last night to the Thunder. And is this a real reason to worry about the Lakers, or is this just a situation that they have the number one seed in the West locked up, so they're going to take their foot off the gas a little bit and not risk anybody getting seriously injured until they get into the postseason?
I think their approach is different, but you've seen it's not been a lack of effort. Like, you watch these games, and Los Angeles has come out with a remarkable amount of juice. LeBron James has had a slow start, and that's going to make a lot of difference here. And we know his approach to things has always been different. It's been more predicated on the postseason and making sure now it's a different year for the schedule entirely, and so he's had to adjust that. But this is a guy who's only going to look to peak now at the right time. What's been encouraging to me in that is you've seen some of the guys that they've brought over. Deion Waiters assert himself a lot offensively for that team in health. Anthony Davis, you could argue, has looked like maybe the best player in the bubble since they've returned. And so getting those things out of the guys that are going to be orbiting around LeBron James is important, because at this point, for me, it's still a benefit of the doubt situation that when it comes to the games that will matter, LeBron James will be ready to carry his load in the way we're used to seeing.
Oh, yeah. You would have put money on that essentially any night of the week there. And, Mike, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining me today. Before I let you go, it seems as though we are in a very big transition point for college football, with Pac-12 and the Big Ten players respectively forming their unity groups and looking to, you know, have protection medically during, you know, trying to get their season played during the coronavirus, looking to have support on economic and racial issues as well. What do you think about these players, you know, taking a stand like this, and what do you think the real ending outcome could be?
I'm hoping the ending outcome could be a seat at the table in a lot of these decisions that get made going forward. That's always been my discomfort in college athletics, and it's been heightened by what's gone on here. None of these are new issues, but they're really whittled down to their core when the subject is the racial inequality that we've seen present itself so strongly over the summer in ways that a lot of people have finally had to reconcile with, and with a virus that impacts the potential health, has so much unknown associated with it, and is such a outlier in terms of health and safety in a lot of ways. And so I'm hoping they end up with a seat at the table, but I've been so proud at not only their willingness to put themselves out there, because at first it was individual players. It was Marvin Wilson at Florida State, Trevor Lawrence just speaking out in support of his teammates, even before we heard from Dabo Swinney at Clemson, was so noteworthy in a lot of this. But now it's being organized. It's having conversations about what are our goals. And you've seen it slowly go. Think about the Texas players earlier this summer and what they banded together to try and get done just at that university, to now see it going conference-wide in the span of just really a summer, making this kind of progress shows me they're learning. They're learning about negotiation and how they want to best present their united front. And they're only going to get better at it as we stack years on top of this, not just months.
Yeah, hopefully this does go in a very positive direction. They can start being treated more than amateur athletes, because they are obviously much more than that on and off the field. But Mike, thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoy your weekend, enjoy the sports out there, and just continue to rock on there at ESPN.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
He is Mike Golic Jr. Very nice to get a chance to talk to him there and get his insight. I often don't get a chance to talk to some of the bigger guys there at the ESPN's main headquarters, so really nice to talk to him and get his insight. But We are going to head to break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this Thursday show here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. Another big thank you to our pal Mike Mazzaferri, as well as Mike Golic Jr. there from ESPN, both taking some time to talk to me today. I was going to dive into some news about the Indianapolis 500. Obviously, an announcement was made that they will be going without fans this year. So initially, the plan was 50% capacity, then it's 25% capacity. Now they've decided to go without any fans there. In the Indianapolis Speedway, which could hold up to about, you know, hundreds of thousands of fans at one point, you know, depending on whether it's a sold out crowd, you got people there in the pit lane. I mean, I think the Speedway can hold up to about 350,000, I believe, is the maximum occupancy there. So they were going to go about 50%, now 25%, now down to zero, mostly because of the rising coronavirus cases there in Indiana, especially the county in which the Speedway is located. So we'll go a little more into detail about that tomorrow when we talk Formula One and everything. But the Indianapolis 500 happening August 23rd, so 17 days away from that, will happen without fans. But that is the show. Again, thank you to Mike Mazzaferri. Thank you to Mike Golic Jr. I'll be on the air tomorrow at 1 o'clock. It'll be Friday, the special two-hour show. Our pal Rick will join us tomorrow as well. So tune in for that. But before then, have a great rest of your Thursday. Enjoy the sports. Peace.